How would you like to build a 10-figure real estate portfolio? Mike Krohn will tell us how. And what's so special about Mike is that he has run a family office with 14,000 apartment units for the last 32 years. And he has now started his own private equity firm. And they are launching their first $100 million fund in the single tenant net lease space. So, Mike, tell us about how can entrepreneurs build 10-figure real estate portfolio?
Property Wealth Strategies podcast with Lily Patrashku shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Lily, good to be with you. Well, you start one figure at a time. That's the easiest way to get it done. When I started with the family office, we owned about 2,500 units back then. And we've really done it the old-fashioned way, the very patient, apply your cash flow. You know, when you get money in the door, hold on to that money, buy another building. When buildings appreciate in value, you refinance them, take money out, buy more property. And you start slow, but over a period of time, if you keep doing that over and over and over again, you kind of look backwards and you say, wow, we really got to 14,000 units and we're still growing.
Thank you. What are your 10 commandments for building a 10-figure real estate portfolio? What are some really key steps property entrepreneurs should consider doing to build a large real estate portfolio?
Well, I think there's a few things. I don't know if I have all 10, but I think first and foremost is patience. There's going to be up cycles. There's going to be down cycles. If you can weather the storm during the down cycles and be aggressive as you're entering up cycles, you can take advantage of those and help build your portfolio. I think the other thing you need to do is really get out in front of the trends that are going on. You know, for instance, we started buying in Texas a long, long time ago. Now, if you think back, some people listening may be old enough to remember the 90s in Texas. You could shoot a cannon through Texas and not hit anything. But we saw what was happening down there. We liked the business climate. We liked the way they were approaching things. And we started buying down there. And lo and behold, corporate entities started going down there, figuring out that it was a great place to live. They were bringing their employees with them. The population was growing. We've done the same thing with Arizona. We went to Arizona probably 30 years ago. We were a little early on. Arizona, the Phoenix area was still pretty developed, but we were a little early on. And as we've gone and now we're building the Southeast Valley, you know, we're building property in Gilbert, Arizona. And that valley, I think Gilbert had a population of all of like 30,000 people 10 years ago. And now they're over 200,000 people. You know, some of that's migration from my home state here in California and other things. But if you get out in front of things and have the conviction to be a little early, you can oftentimes take advantage of the trends that are happening. And that's where you see the biggest growth. I talk to a lot of people on the private equity side. They're waiting and waiting. They want it to look just right before they stick their foot in the water. And I would always tell them, if you wait till it looks just right, everybody is already there and you're probably paying too much for what you're getting. If you're willing to be early and have the conviction, then you can do pretty well. You know, beyond that, you know, I think in order to get to that point, you have to grow your team, and you have to be very intentional about how you grow your team. We've always operated we're a family office. We like to think of ourselves as family. We like to treat our employees like family. We don't want them to be married to the office. We want them to have their life, to spend their time with their family and kids, but we still want them to get their job done. And it takes hiring the right kind of people to make sure that you're hiring the very best that will focus when they need to focus and can get the rest and get away from the office when they need to get away.
Thank you. What kind of infrastructure and leadership do you have to build in order to build a 10-figure real estate portfolio?
We have always insisted that we be owner managers. We've never wanted to turn our management over to a third-party manager. So we manage everything we own, and we own everything we manage. That gives you a little different perspective on how you're going to fill out your teams. We need regional people to oversee. I mean, we have employees on site who the manager, the maintenance foreman, who take care of the day-to-day work. You know, we'll have maintenance techs and leasing agents and all the other people that make each individual apartment complex go. But we also need regional teams to keep their pulse on the region, let us know when problems were starting to develop, allow us to address those problems, and to be able to fill out the teams. But we've always believed that there should be backup as well. So we've hired other main office people. You know, we have a vice president of property management whose job is to oversee all of the regional managers. He's got to know what's going on a more global basis. We have a team that handles all of our technical aspects. They'll look at all the new technology coming into our space and evaluate it and decide which ones we ought to deploy and which ones we should. And then we have our, what I'd call our top team that really looks after the economics of the venture and makes sure that the cash flow and the growth is achieving what we expect it to.
Tell me about a family office. Is it a real family in the sense that, like, I don't know, me and my brother and my mother and my whatever, my grandmother, we all pull money together and we kind of like buy stuff? Or is it that some friends kind of get together and say, okay, we're going to be a family office and then we're going to do that? Tell me, is it, what's actually family office? Is it a real family that kind of like pull their money together? Or is it like a bunch of friends that consider themselves a family office?
Yeah, no, this one is a real honest to goodness family. As a matter of fact, the patriarch of the family was my first wife's father. Still is my first wife's father, but that's how I ultimately came to work for him. He's been at it now for 50, 60 years. I mean, he's on an age at this point, but he's done remarkably well. I've been lucky enough to be there to help him grow in methodical ways. He hadn't done any development until I got there. So I helped him with that. He didn't know what a 1031 exchange was till I got there, and we helped get out of some of the properties we owned in California and into things that were better in Texas. But yeah, no, it really is a family. And it makes the decision tree very, very short. I have one person I have to make happy, and that's, I walk into the corner and I say, what do you want to do?
Thank you. So, would you say that most family offices are actually family that kind of gets their funds invested, and that's how it typically works, right? And they leverage economies of scale, and they leverage the fact that they pool their money together to buy stuff. And that's the thing that makes the process of expanding relatively quick, and also perhaps buying at a discount or buying cash and then, you know, getting a bigger building or whatever, because they were able to pull the money together. Is that how it works?
I think there's both. There are families who are truly just families. There's wealthy, there's very wealthy, and there's the ultra wealthy families that, you know, the real big family offices can do their own thing. They don't need any help from anybody. They have plenty of capital. You know, the names you probably have seen in the Fortune 500 list or Barron's list of, or, you know, the or Forbes list of the top people in the country. Others have been organized more, as you were talking about, where a number of different families will get together, or a group will go out there and say, I'm going to develop a family office, and they bring families in to pool the resources and be able to make larger purchases and larger acquisitions and get into things that each individual family might not be able to do, but together they're able to do. Or they're able to just mitigate their risk by diversifying into other areas.
Thank you. What makes building a 10-year real estate portfolio possible for a regular person? Like, how do they expand so far? Because I would say most people don't ever get this far. They maybe, I don't know, they may get, I don't know, 10 properties or 5 properties, or, you know, they don't get to manage 14,000 units. That's not like a typical thing. What would you say is required for someone to get this far?
I think it goes back to time and patience. If you're willing to forego current consumption and put the money back into the business and just say, I'm going to keep growing this. I'm going to forego spending money today because I want to invest for tomorrow. And you do that for long enough, anybody can get there. But it does require a lot of discipline. You have to make some right choices. I mean, you know, look, there's a lot of people who invested in the multifamily world in 2021, in the few years before that. They all thought they were geniuses because the market went up exponentially in 21 and 22. Those same people, if they had bought in 2023, would be looking at a very different world, because we've all seen overbuilding. We've seen a lot of things happen. Rental rates have come down. We're off 4 or 5% in some places, and the world looks very different. If you're able to either get those cycles correctly, and that's very, very difficult, or be consistent. It's like dollar cost averaging. Be consistent in your, I'm going to put this much money back into real estate. I'm going to buy another, you know, maybe you're buying single family homes. I'm going to buy another family home every 6 months. I'm going to put away enough money to do that. And then before you know it, you've got 2 or 3 or 4. When you hit an upcycle and you're able to get appreciation from those, you can sell those and buy into bigger buildings. And it just keeps snowballing. But it takes time. I mean, you know, look, I've started my own private equity group, and we're out raising money right now. And we're going to buy, we're in an entirely different end of the spectrum. We're buying single tenant net lease retail properties because we wanted this to be a relatively safe investment for people, but it's also timely. I mean, we started in 2022, but interest rates were going up, and what we're doing doesn't work in that environment. So I said, stop, we can't do this. We waited until last fall when I felt like interest rates had peaked and we're going to start coming down. Now I think we're going to hit a cycle where I can get better than average returns on that investment for people. If I had done it 2 years ago, I probably would have gotten worse than average returns.
Thank you. So what's required for someone to build a 10-figure real estate portfolio, to either set up their own family office or to collaborate with a family office like yours that already knows where to invest and how to do it in a timely way so that you can leverage on potential appreciation of properties you're going to buy?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a big wide world out there of things that people can invest their money in. In order to really get to those points, you know, a lot of the financial advisors, and close your ears if you're listening, they'll tell you diversify, diversify, diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket because something could happen to that basket. You know, the other adage that a number of people have heard over time is put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket really, really closely. I think in order to get to those kind of numbers and build a portfolio like that, you have to be willing to bet on yourself that you're right, you know what you're doing, and you're willing to put your eggs all in the same basket to multiply that, the size of that basket over time. I you know, if you want to spread your wealth out and invest in a little bit in stocks, a little bit in bonds, a little bit in real estate, you're going to do very well. Don't get me wrong. But you're not going to grow to the point where you get to 10 figures. You're just not going to be able to do that.
Thank you. You mentioned earlier about investing early before someone has even thought of investing in that particular area. What are you talking about specifically in terms of investing early? Are you talking about distressed properties? Are you talking about seeing the trend for, let's say, I know a new school, a new train, a new something is going to be built in the area, and then having that kind of information in advance and then investing in advance of the investment being done in terms of like the regeneration project that perhaps the government is planning to do, kind of thing?
I think there's a number of things in there that are all can be true. I look at it more in getting in the way of trends in the real estate market. Looking at what I'm doing on my single tenant net lease retail fund, I know that segment of the market is very tied to interest rates. So I wanted to see a period, not when interest rates were coming down, but when I thought they weren't going to go up anymore, because I know that once they stop going up, eventually they're going to come down. That's just the way the cycle works over a long period of time. I had to have the conviction to say, I'm going to be a little early here. I don't know for sure that interest rates are coming down. I don't have a crystal ball, but I know from all the research that I've done and all the experience that I've had looking at real estate cycles that this situation is probably going to result in that happening. So I'm willing to jump in now because I think that's what's going to happen in the future. There's a lot of other situations like you're talking about where, as I mentioned earlier, we went down to Texas to buy apartments when nobody was going to Texas. But we saw what Texas had, and we saw the glimmer of what Texas could be. And we made a bet that going down there was going to be the right thing to do. And we bought units anywhere from $8,000 a door to $40,000 a door. I mean, that was considered a princely sum back then. And now those same properties will trade for $250,000 or $300,000 a door. So we were early, but we were also right, and we were willing to make that bet to get there. There's other situational things. I mean, I don't look, distressed property is difficult because there's some distressed property that's distressed because it hasn't been managed very well. There's some distressed property that's distressed because at this moment in time, it's just out of favor. And there's some distressed property that is just distressed and should be distressed, and you don't want to touch it. You can make money, if you have the courage of your convictions and step in and buy things that you really have a thesis for why they're going to get better. Or as you suggest, if there's certain developments going on, I think, the one that comes immediately to mind is we own property out in the Northwest Phoenix area. Now we owned it before we knew Taiwan Semiconductor was going to build. I mean, I talk about a fab plant, but it's like a city. I mean, it's going crazy out there. But we knew, we're out there, we're in the way of that. Others are getting in the way. We built property in the Southeast Valley more intentionally because we saw long ago that they put a joint customs facility at the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. And we had the conviction that that was going to change the dynamics of that area. Now that and Intel and everything else going on has really been a boom to the Southeast Valley and Phoenix, but we had a thesis that things were going to happen and we wanted to be there, and we were willing to put our money up to do that.
Thank you. How does someone find out this kind of like insider information that will reveal the likelihood that a property will go up?
There's really no insider information when it comes to stuff like that. It really amounts to the experience of watching markets. I mean, people buy stocks without insider information, and some of them make a lot of money because they can analyze a stock and they know what the business is. They know where they're going to be and what they're doing. And they may have seen something before everybody else. It's not insider information. It's just really good nitty gritty research. And they get out in front of it. The same holds true in the real estate market. If you look and you're willing to look at different areas around the country and look at the areas that are growing, look at the areas that maybe aren't growing yet, but are starting to do the right things to get in the way of it. I think there's a lot of smart people out there who have made bets on certain geographic areas that have turned out to be correct. And they've made them at the correct time when, you know, in the various real estate cycles, the market was, for whatever reason, was down a little, and they were willing to go, you know, it's down a little. I really like this geography. I'm going to put my chips on the table and I'm going to go for it.
Thank you. How does someone choose the right area? Because, like, for example, why did you choose Texas? Why did you choose Arizona? Why did you choose the other areas you invested in? What were, like, some key KPIs, like some key points that you looked at and said, okay, these are the kind of reasons why we think that this area is a great one to invest in?
You know, it's funny because the reasons that we invest in certain areas really aren't a whole lot different between our multifamily approach and our single tenant net lease retail approach. It really gets down to basics. Where is there a growing population? You know, where are the demographics rising rather than falling? What does the job market look like in those geographic locations? And, you know, if you hit those things, generally speaking, you're going to have a pretty good business environment for real estate. You know, conversely, if you're in areas, and I use California as an example, I really hope my state will get out of the funk that it's in, but it has been very bad for business in California. Businesses are leaving and people are leaving, and that's not good for real estate. That doesn't really help. So I think, you know, it really gets down to just the very basics. Now, specific properties, there's a much more fundamental analysis or detailed analysis that you would want to do. I mean, if I'm buying a retail property, I want to make sure I'm on the right corner. And I always think of it, the way I tell the story is, when I drive out to the desert, I've got a house out there on La Quinta, I drive in on Jefferson. Well, on the right side driving in, there's a CVS. On the other side of the street, going the other way, was a Walgreens. Well, nobody's stopping at the drugstore on their way out of town. They're all stopping at the drugstore on their way into town. You want to be on the correct side of the street. You know, that's just simple stuff. When you're investing in multifamily, you know, we always like to be, the difficulties we've had, let me put it like this, with any property, the difficulty we've had has always been that we didn't have enough drive-by traffic. We bought it. It was a really great property. It had a lot of stuff going for it. The units were beautiful, but it wasn't on a main street. It didn't just, people didn't know it was there. So we have to do extra marketing to get people aware of where we are. I'd rather be on a main street. I'd rather be visible to people. Every development we've done that's been visible has been very, very successful.
Thank you. Tell us about your private equity firm and launching the first $100 million fund. How does it work? How can people get involved?
Well, we started, you know, I wanted to do something on my own. Thankfully, you know, as we discussed earlier, I've got a wonderful team running my family office, so I can be there for them when they need big decisions made, but I don't have to be there every single minute of every day. So I wanted to launch something on my own. And when we started that process, we looked around at what would be the best real estate play for us. And we ultimately landed on the single tenant net lease retail space, but only looking at very high credit tenants. Everybody else, I just literally this morning was looking at the report on Agree Realties. They're one of our competitors. They're a public REIT. In our space, there are about 67% credit tenants. We wanted to be 100%. I figured we could do that better because we're smaller and more nimble and still get returns that were consistent with what they were able to get. You know, the process was really simple. Like I said, geography was everything to us. We were investing in the Sun Belt, the Southwest and the Southeast, up through the Midwest and the mountain regions, basically staying out of the West Coast and the Northeast. And the reasons for that really are, there's a lot of them, but the biggest one is I'm buying a piece of property with a credit tenant. So I'm relying on the credit of that tenant. Why would I pay more for the same income stream in California than I do in North Carolina. I'd rather get more income because the value is going to be more dependent on interest rates than it is on the actual geography. The geography is important, don't get me wrong, but interest rate movement is what matters. And as I said earlier, that's where we saw ourselves right now. So I think, you know, for people that want to get involved, we're certainly out looking for investors. They can visit our website, guardiannetlease.com. That will get them directly to me. I'm always happy to answer questions. You know, what we're able to do, and it's a little different than how I approach the multifamily, we're basically looking at this interest rate cycle saying, I can produce a 5 to 6.5% cash on cash return paid out quarterly to our investors, but because of where we're entering, I can get an overall return that gets into the mid to upper teens on what's really a very safe investment. And then you layer on top of that all the depreciation we get now because of the bill that Congress passed this previous year. And, you know, for investors that have money that need some place to put it, want to keep it in real estate, like having some upside, but like also like the stability of a coupon every quarter, that's really what we've tried to do. And because it's my first fund, we've really been overly friendly to our investors. We were only charging a 1.5% fee on capital raised, and that's the only fee. Others have looked at us and said, you're crazy. You're giving up all this. I said, you know what? If I treat my investors well, they'll treat me well, and everything will work out in the end.
Thank you. Any other way for entrepreneurs to connect with you, or just the website that you mentioned already?
The website's great. I'm happy to have them email me. The email is mike@guardian-advisory.com. I answer all my email personally and every day, so I'm happy to answer questions that anybody might have.
Thank you.
Follow me for more property wealth strategies.